Welcome to the Finance Administration and Operations Committee meeting. Call the meeting to order, and Marlene, please take the roll.
Committee Chair Peterson?
Here.
Director Gonzalez?
Here.
Director Darcy?
Here.
Chair, we have a call.
Thank you. It was an agenda item approval of minutes of the Finance Administration Operations Committee meeting held on June 19th. Those are going to be deferred to the August meeting because they weren't finalized yet. Executive Director has some items.
Sure, thank you very much. Good to be back. Just a quick update on bonds. As you know, we've been watching the market very closely, and we're looking to do refunding in the past few weeks. We were looking to determine our best options for that refunding of the Tollways 2005 Series A bonds. Mike Kelch and his team were watching the market very closely. And yesterday, we got some pricing, which was great, and we think that ultimately this refunding is going to save us about $13 million of debt service on a present value basis. So, you know, that's going to be a nice savings. It's a little lower than I think we maybe had originally authorized or anticipated, but we'll be watching for additional opportunities just to see when the market conditions are right if we want to do anything further. Do you have anything else you want to mention?
Just that this was just a portion of what the board authorized. We looked at about $228 million of bonds between January 1, 2017 and January 1, 2019 that the market had impacted the least. We actually were able to get in the market on a time yesterday where the municipal market had recovered some of the losses that it had suffered in prior weeks. We got in at a good time. We were able to refund those bonds, those early bonds, and then we're looking now, we're watching to see if we have a similar opportunity for some of the longer bonds so that we can achieve the level of savings that I think we discussed back in May. It was really very close to what we discussed in May, a little bit less. I think about $13 million in present value savings, and in May, I think it was a little over $14 million.
So, if there are any questions on that, otherwise, I'll move to
Nice job, Mike. Yeah, nice job. A lot of work has been put into that. And, our financial, you work hand in hand with our financial advisors.
Bill O'Connell and Kathy Williams and our financial team.
That's good job. Good job.
We actually have a couple of, I don't want to call them outside groups, but people who do not work for the tollway. We're going to be addressing the board today, or the board committee today. And one of them is the Illinois Finance Authority, as long as it's with its partner agency, about a new program that we're partnering with them on. So last May, the tollway really began working with the Illinois Finance Authority, the IFA, and the Chicago Community Loan Fund on the Small Contractor Bridge Program, which provides working capital loans for small contractors, including disadvantaged, minority, and women-owned businesses. As you know from the many presentations we've had on this topic, you know, as we are trying to grow the base of businesses that can compete for tollway work, particularly on the construction side, because we are going to be spending quite a bit of money on construction in the coming years, one of the things we've heard back from the community of small businesses out there, minority women-owned businesses out there who might want to take advantage of those opportunities, is that, you know, particularly as the credit markets have maybe dried up a little bit in the last couple of years, they have difficulty accessing, you know, lines of credit and working capital. And of course, that's going to be necessary in any business for them to grow and take advantage of additional opportunities. So the program really helps small and diverse firms obtain surety bonding and get pre-approved for loans to help them compete for public works projects. And again, you know, cover those spreads between when they start work and start incurring costs, and sometimes when they're paid, even under the best of circumstances. So the program is currently in its pilot stage with $500,000 each from the IFA and CCLF for a total of $1 million in available funding. But I think it is viewed as a pilot, and I know we're going to hear today from IFA Senior Policy Analyst Sarah Marr and CCLF Senior Loan Program Officer Wendell Harris, who will give us an update on the program and talk a little bit about what they view as metrics and potential success, and hopefully we can talk a little bit about how the program might grow. So thank you very much for coming. If you want to come up
Sure.
to the microphone, We are on the air, so that's why we have a...
Okay.
Your voices would probably carry for this room, but we do broadcast live to our millions of viewers.
That's fine. I just had a radio interview last evening, so I think I'm... I've had enough practice, yes. So, good morning, everyone, and Executive Director LaFleur has very eloquently summarized the program. And I have to say that it's an honor and pleasure to be here because the TOLWE has been so supportive in the program's development as well as in the rollout of the program. So Small Contractor Bridge is a program designed to lower the financial barriers faced by minority-owned, women-owned, disadvantaged businesses by providing them access to working capital, surety bonding assistance, as well as technical assistance on the job. This is not your conventional loan program. It has very unique features. For example, we don't require traditional collateral to be pledged, which happens to be a barrier for many of these small businesses. But we do require that there be a third-party funds administrator that ensures that the suppliers are paid, the laborers are paid, and that the loan is repaid, which is of particular interest to the lenders here. And second, we provide an additional layer of project oversight because we want to make sure that the contractor successfully completes the job because so many people are at stake here and want to make sure that there are no defaults whatsoever. So, you know, you have the Illinois Finance Authority, you have the Chicago Community Loan Fund, the surety underwriting firm, the surety company, the public agency, the TOLWE. How does this all work? And I want to provide you an example using the Sohair Construction Company as one. And I'm oversimplifying, but I want you to get how the program works because it's not as straightforward. There's a two-step process here. So say, for example, the TOLWE puts an RFP out for a $1 million paving project. And the Sohair Construction Company has, you know, a ton of subcontracting work experience, but bonding has always been an issue. So I go to the Chicago Community Loan Fund, and I apply for a loan. The loan is approved, and a bid bond is also issued, and I bid on the contract. The contract is awarded to me. Then the loans are dispersed into an escrow account, which can be used throughout the duration of the project to lease equipment, to, you know, pay suppliers, laborers, etc. And then the surety bond is also issued. And we will work with the contractor throughout the project, providing technical assistance so that the project is completed and the loan is repaid. And in a nutshell, that's how it works. I have to say that to date, although it's on a pilot stage, we have issued three bid bonds totaling $2.4 million, and we have another 50 contractors in the pipeline. So there is a clear and demonstrated need for this program. And again, you know, we're working very closely with you, with the Chicago Community Loan Fund, to really help these small and diverse businesses compete competitively for these contracting opportunities. I have Wendell Harris here to answer any detailed questions that you may have about the loan program, the terms and conditions, etc. So if Director LaFleur, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you. Well, I would ask the board members, or if anyone, frankly, has any questions about how the program works.
What's your budget for your funding?
Sure. So on a preliminary basis, you know, Christy was just talking about, and Mike, about bonds. Primarily, that's what the IFA does. So this is a very new program or new grounds for the IFA. And on a pilot basis, we've committed $500,000.
and the Chicago Community Loan Fund has matched that, bringing that up to $1 million of available funding, and we anticipate that will support $10 million in contracts for these small contractors. So with regards to budget, like administration of the program, a lot of the work, because IFA is the participating lender, so we're on the back end of the administration of the program, the Chicago Community Loan Fund has recently hired Wendell for this particular program. So they have definitely invested monies to administer the program, and IFA will use its existing resources to do so.
You said you have about 50 contractors in the pipeline, so to speak. How were they made aware of the program through doing a campaign? I think we were on the radio yesterday. But
to be honest, this actually came about through a host of different channels. Reaching out to various businesses and business owners that I've had a chance to deal with in previous organizations, touching base with local organizations that pretty much help us actually get the word out. Because it is a pilot program, we're literally doing a grassroots marketing effort. So any industry, any companies that we come into contact with that can help us draw in that particular group, we're trying to get in front of that group so we can get the word out. Because if they don't know about the program, then we're not going to get the results that we're trying, that we're looking for. And ultimately, we want to create a greater pipeline of small contractors that eventually become prime. And really, that's the goal of the program. Because there's an education piece that we didn't talk about in detail that's included. Because without the education, the understanding of how to bid, you know, how to go through the letting process, estimating jobs. If the contractor does not have that understanding of what to do, they're going to fail regardless of if they're issued the capital.
Can we talk a little bit about the approval timeline? Because sometimes, you know, the opportunity comes up. If the contractor, you know, goes to get the loan and the correct funding, you know, is the time frame accelerated enough so that they can take advantage of an opportunity after it's been put out, or do they need to kind of get prepared in advance? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'll speak to it. Well, as Sohair stated, there's technically a two-part process. Actually, you have two organizations. Well, there's multiple organizations involved in the process, IFA, CCLF, a host of bond surety companies. But from the underwriting standpoint, the surety company, they have an underwriting criteria that they actually go through first. And the goal is to actually get them approved for a bid and performance bond. Once that's actually done and they've gotten that approval, then CCLF is contacted and the file is forwarded to CCLF. I actually will review the file. Generally, we give about a 7 to 10 day turnaround time as far as an approval. From that standpoint, our committee meets right now monthly, but based upon the results that we intend to get with the program, we're looking to get in-house approval to where as the applications come in, I can approve them, we can go ahead and issue the capital.
How much time to spend?
From the CCLF side, I would say somewhere around 2 to 4 weeks. I would estimate 2 to 4 weeks right now.
For us to do
full due diligence. And also, you have to take into consideration, we have a lot of small contractors, and from a administrative standpoint, sometimes that's not their core competence.
Right, it can take a little while.
And ultimately, our education piece is what we want to key in on, so we can help them with that, which will help them be able to bid and be prepared to bid for jobs.
Any other questions?
Yeah, what are the basic qualifications you're looking for somebody to approach you? What type of resume, I guess, would you look for?
We're at least looking for 2 years experience. Last 2 years of good payment history. We're not looking for excellent credit. Kind of hard to find these days in this market. No bankruptcies in the past 5 years.
No criminal
records. Even, and I'll be honest with you, I had a couple applications come in that actually had criminal backgrounds, and that's on CCLF to dig deeper and do our due diligence, because we found that it was something that we could actually get around, but generally no criminal background.
I did want to add that this program is intended not for subcontractors, but for first-time prime contractors, and we are willing to provide financing or loans for contracts ranging from $500,000 to $5 million.
Wonderful. Thank you for your time. Thank you for coming this morning.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful program and fills the gap and helps small businesses become primes.
And again, if you all can help us be a voice as far as getting the message out, it will really help the program as well.
They certainly will. I think we'll be in a moment talking about how much outreach we do on an annual basis and how much is planned for the remainder of the year, so we can certainly start incorporating this program into the education that we are doing already. So thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it. And, you know, this is your 5 minutes of fame. Enjoy it. Our broadcast meeting. So the second presentation that we have today, we're so excited to welcome and introduce someone from Fermilab, who is going to talk a little bit, oh my goodness, about the Muon G2 ring. I just have been calling it the ring, so this is as much as I've known about it up to this point. The 50-foot-wide electromagnet that is traveling from New York to Fermilab in Batavia and is going to be on the tollway system. So if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself,
sure.
I'm sorry, because I think we thought some other folks were going to be here, and tell us a little bit about the trip of this amazing piece of equipment.
Sure. I'm Del Alspach from Fermilab. I'm the project engineer working on helping to get the rings moved from a laboratory in New York from Long Island to Fermilab. Fermilab has subcontracted Emmert International out of Portland, Oregon, and they are in charge of helping us make the move all the way from New York to Chicago to Fermilab. So I want to thank you for inviting us today. Dana Habnerak has been a great help to us, and we thank the tollway system for his help. And so this is a presentation of a little bit about the science behind the experiment. The rings were used in the G-2 experiment at Brookhaven about 10 to 15 years ago. We will be using about 90% of the experiment again at Fermilab. The rings can be seen underneath this insulated space here. We have another picture that shows you a little bit closer up what they look like. But Brookhaven Lab is another DOE-funded lab that has been involved with physics and in studying the muons. So we plan that in a couple of years we'll be up and running at Fermilab with a higher power beam and also upgraded detectors to tell us more information about the muon. Here you can see the rings. We're going to use truck and barge to move them. These are already out on the waterways. There's three rings that are tied together with interconnect region. And these are the rings that contain the superconducting coils that will create the magnetic field to steer the paths of the muons. The largest ring is 50 feet 4 inches in diameter. We looked at other options for moving the rings. One was to, in part, move them with a very powerful helicopter, but due to cost issues and feasibility of route, we decided the trucking and barging was a better option. Cost is minimized. We have a lower risk. It minimizes the impact on the public because the roadway travel could occur during evening and nighttime hours. One important feature was that we want to keep the rings horizontal because they were not designed to be stressed in a vertical position. And the roadway, travel over the roadways was found to be achievable. So we contracted Emmert Engineering and we gave them a set of criteria for deflection and stress. And they were able to design this system where they use some components of their standard trailers, a special shipping fixture that the rings are installed on that will keep coil stresses below 500 PSI. And this included a safety factor of 6 for the stress on the coils. This shows a little bit about what the trailer looks like. It's altogether 117 feet long with the prime mover, the trailer, and the ring sitting on top. It's roughly 14 feet tall with the load, and again, it's 50 feet 4 inches wide. You can see in this photo there's some the interconnect piping that ties the three rings together that feeds the liquid nitrogen, the liquid helium, the power through the superconducting cables to the three rings. And so we needed to build a special support system. Fermilab took this on, and it's tied to the shipping fixture to be sure it stays stable during the move. This is a photo at Brookhaven National Lab from just a few weeks back. We moved them over this truck and trailer over the land. This is the prime mover, and again, this is the specialized trailer. This is similar to the trailers that are used to move the space shuttle through LA. Emmert also used this type of trailer to move the large rock. Terry Emmert can tell you a bit more about some of his background. But they moved that large rock to a museum in downtown LA just last year, over 116 miles of public roadways. This is the map of where we moved over the site at Brookhaven National Lab, and then this is the William Floyd Parkway. This was done about 3.5 weeks ago, and then the following evening or night, we moved across the public tollway. That took us from sort of the center of Long Island down the William Floyd Parkway to the Smith Point Marina, where it was loaded onto the barge. This is a shot of the rings on the barge as they're leaving Long Island. The path on the ocean is along the south, along the eastern seaboard, down through the Atlantic, up the Gulf. The rings have already gone through the part of the river system, which includes the Tennessee Tom Bigbee Waterway. And as of just overnight, it entered onto the Mississippi River south of St. Louis. This is a map of the path. This is Smith Point. So the various dates are shown here. We came down around Florida, up the Gulf, and we're currently on the Mississippi River bordering Missouri and Illinois. When the rings arrive to Fermilab, they'll stop at a Lamont port on the Illinois waterway. This is the Ozinga port in Lamont, just next to Lamont Road. This is a shot of the tollway. We have taken measurements here, and we clear by roughly a foot on each side of this. So there's nothing that Nothing that needs to be taken down as far as tollway plazas. So you'll be comforted to know that the rings, when they go through this area, will be at just walking speed. They're spotters. Terry can tell you more about that. They'll be very careful. They're professionals at this, and we expect absolutely no damage at all. Most obstacles clear by much more than that. After the first night of travel, we'll be parking the rings next to the parking lot. This is a Costco next to I-355 in Bolingbrook on Boughton Road. The second night, it will be parked just across from the Walmart in Glen Island, which is the Hidden Lake Forest Preserve. We'll be backing into this area, and that'll mark the second day of travel. And then by the third day, we will be at Fermilab, and we will enter through the Eola Gate on the south side of the laboratory. So our expected schedule, our ETA right now for the tug and barge to reach Lamont is Saturday, roughly around noon. We will be getting a crane, and as long as the tug and barge reach Lamont by that time during the day, we will be moving the rings off of the barge and onto the Emmert trailer in the Ozinga port. Then it'll take a day or two to lash down the load, install all the proper roadway lights, etc., and everything will be done to prepare for the IDOT inspection to make sure everything is roadworthy. Then we expect on Tuesday night or early Wednesday morning, we'll be transporting from the Ozinga port to Costco. That's the Lamont Road and 87th Street or Boughton portion of the trip. The next night would be late Wednesday and through the morning, early morning hours on Thursday. We'll go from Costco to the Hidden Lake Forest Preserve, which includes the I-355, Butterfield Road, and Highway 53, a portion of Highway 53 roadways. Then Thursday night, Friday morning, we'll move from Hidden Lake to Fermilab, taking Highway 53 to get to I-88, exiting at Highway 59, and then we use Ferry Road and Eola Road to get to Fermilab. On Friday evening, we will be hosting a public event, and the transport of the rings will go over Eola Road to the staging location, which will pass by our Wilson Hall high-rise for the public to see the moving of the rings to our site. So I can take questions. I'd also like to ask Terry Emmert to come up at this point, and he's the Vice President of Emmert International and will be able to firsthand answer questions about the moving over the roadways.
Thank you, Dale. Good morning. I'm Terry Emmert with Emmert International. I am the Vice President of Emmert International. Just wanted to give you a little bit of background of how we came to this route and what we're really trying to do a little bit more in detail and be able to answer any questions you guys may have. You know, we started this just about a year ago, investigating different routes and methods to transport it. And specifically, I'm talking about here in Chicago. It's, you know, very large community with a lot of activity going on. We've investigated jointly with the Tollway Authority, the state, and counties and other municipalities, probably 10 to 15 different routes, all trying to make them work. The problem being 50-foot diameter, it's pretty hard to find something that just doesn't have a lot of infrastructure removal. That's what really made the tollway the most attractive route for us. Taking into consideration limiting the impact of the traveling public and safety. What it really came down to is 355 and I-88 is where we're concentrating on. During the course of this, we decided to break the move into multiple nights to make it easier. We were trying to go from Lamont to Fermi Lab, you know, continuously in one night or two nights. After discussions, we decided it'd be safer and more efficient if we broke it down into multiple nights. That's why we ended up with these two parking spots in between. And really the reason is to ensure the time slots that we've been given, that we can hit them accurately and make sure we're on the road at that time and off easily before traffic starts up again. We looked at traffic counts with Dana Havernack and picked obviously the lowest traffic count areas. And that's one of the reasons why we're planning right at 355 and 87th. So it's a short jump for us to get right on the tollway, which our restrictions right now for the tollway is midnight. So midnight to 5 a.m. generically is that time frame. The state has a different restriction and the county has a different restriction from that. But the tollway is the main one we're trying to work with and make sure impacts are kept low for the traveling public. What we will be doing during the move, there will be a couple signals like on the on-ramps and off-ramps that were coming off that have to be taken down, and we are taking them down just in time. So we'll have Mead Electric is the company that's been contracted to do that work. And they'll have two crews in front and two crews in back. The plan is, say if we're going to start at midnight, at 11:30, their trucks will go out, take down the signal heads, we'll start moving out of our parking spot, and then right behind us is two more crews, putting those back up immediately after we pass by. So it's literally going to be 15, 20 minutes. The signals will be back up, and then we'll have the police escorts behind us continue to control traffic till that intersection is restored to a safe condition. And once we get on 355, as you can imagine, 50 foot wide, it's gonna take up all the tollway. And for safety reasons, we're just gonna kind of be a running roadblock moving anywhere from 10 to 30 miles an hour down the tollway. And on 355, we get off at Butterfield. And the challenge there is there's a plaza on the off-ramp. So what we have to do is use the on-ramp. So what we're going to do is, if you can imagine, we're going to drive past it and then essentially back up the on-ramp to then turn on to Butterfield. And we got to do this a couple of times. We got to do it there, then we got to do it on I-88 also to get on. I'll really open it up for questions, because I'm sure there's a lot of curious ones. I just can't cover them all. Like, we would talk all day long, but to imagine 50-foot diameter going down the road, four lanes isn't enough. So you really need five plus just for the width. And then for length, you can imagine the support vehicles. You have a quarter mile to half mile of support vehicles in front and behind, just making sure all operations, maintenance is going to be there, construction departments, and then you got the different agencies, tollway, the state, DuPage County, and the municipalities. One other thing I'd like to tell you about this cross set that I had missed, this 50-foot diameter, it's really not weight on this thing. It's all about size. And if you take that 50-foot diameter ring and imagine it as a plate of glass, that's how fragile this thing is. If it gets twisted more than 2 millimeters, we're going to break the inside of this and ruin the experiment. So that's what really drove the methods and the equipment employed, was really make sure you don't twist or rack that thing. So that's why you see that big red spider looking support structure. It's just to make sure that ring doesn't get twisted in any way. Doesn't increase the width of it, but it does strengthen it up considerably. And with that, I'll just open it up for some general questions.
You may have answered the weight-wise. I was concerned about the structural load capacity of the roads and the impact of the roads, but it sounds like it's not an issue.
Not an issue.
Just to give you an answer, this trailer is, there's quite a few of them in our fleet. Typically, they're allowed 50,000 pounds per axle line. There's two axles across. On this transport, we're at 13 with everything.
Any
And then the time basically is from midnight till 5? And what's the loss?
About. That's the allowable window, and that was based on, you know, our traffic counts and our main performance during this time period.
What's the loss revenue during that time? You guys calculate that?
We can get that, I don't know.
We're not expecting any loss revenue involved, because it's going to be a moving closure. So just a brief pause to slow traffic and stop them, allow the unit to enter, and then move along, and so we'll have traffic actually behind us as we move the ring. So
yeah, we're really not expecting it to take 5 hours, right, John?
No, we're expecting to move on our system actually only to be a short, relatively short period of time.
It's going to go a lot faster than what we've laid out on paper. We took a really conservative approach. When we get on to I-355, I think we planned on a couple hours. I'll be surprised if it takes an hour to get from 87th to Butterfield. The road's in great condition. What we have to be careful of is the trailer doesn't start what we call harmonics going, where the load and the end start bouncing. That road is really smooth. As long as the cryostat can handle it, we'll do it. Generally, what limits us is if we don't have good visibility to make sure we're not going to hit something, obviously, which we know we won't on the tollway or on the tollways, but also how the load's riding. So we'll kick it up and move it. We've got everything laid out just in time. So when that load starts coming down the on-ramp, the state police have got it shut down, and we're going. And it's next stop, Butterfield. The same thing will happen on I-88.
How will weather impact you? Will you be monitoring if there's any storms coming in?
We have, and it is a concern. And really the criteria is if visibility gets bad out there, and you know, it's reduced to a not a safe situation, we'll just have to stop and wait another night. We won't even start out.
Okay.
Because there's really no way to go.
There's not necessarily the concern about wind, it's visibility that would be the concern.
It's about public visibility. Seeing those safety lights is really what it's all about. Our equipment can handle it, our personnel can handle a lot of conditions, but it's the general public and make sure they can see what's going on.
Yes, the deal this will happen on 25th?
It's going to happen, sorry, I lost count of my days, but it's next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
Evening is when we plan on starting.
You mentioned there was a foot clearance on each side.
Mm-hmm. On the gantry, the toll pass, the I-pass reader?
Yes.
Yes.
What about on the height?
Height isn't too bad. We are 14 foot loaded, and that's pretty much, I think it's 6 inches above standard regulations. I'm not even sure it's on the permit, the height, because it's within legal limits. Yeah.
That ring be able to accommodate, I love my iPad sticker on it.
You put a big box up there too.
Drive now, text later.
It is going to attract a lot of attention, there's no doubt about that. And if the parking areas that we're asking for the county or the state police to help with traffic control, so pedestrians aren't out in the roadway trying to cross the street to come and look at it, especially children. So we're conscious of that, and we're going to make sure.
You've had people stopping and watching it pass in some of the communities you've gone through, haven't you?
In Long Island, we have about 1,000 people out there along William Floyd Parkway, and it's a very remote area. They were coming from all over. It does attract a lot of attention. It really does. And they're excited about it. They want to see it turn and how it's going to maneuver. Because once you look at it in person, you just can't represent it on paper or in a photo. You really can't. It's white.
So I really appreciate, the their coordination with us on this. I went to one meeting. I know there was like 50 people in there. We had a lot of state police representation and a lot of people from maintenance and operations there and traffic, bouncing ideas off of you. And I think, you've got a solid plan to move it.
Yeah, I feel that way too. It's the right plan. It's the right route. And now we just have to execute it. And we will do that too. Anything else?
Thank you so much for coming. Good luck. Really appreciate it. Our chief engineer, too, will be biting his fingernails during that 1 foot clearance. So that's all I have, unless there are questions for me.
Go to finance, early payment of the total balance owed to Rosemont with cost of the Alamo ramp.
So finance has one item this morning. Peterson mentioned it's approval to pay off the amount that TOA owes with respect to an intergovernmental agreement with the village of Rosemont for the construction, cost of construction of the Memorial Ramp. In February 2011, the TOA board approved this intergovernmental agreement. At the time, it was determined that the village of Rosemont Act offered to finance the cost of the construction of this ramp. It did not fit within our typical criteria in terms of the payoff schedule at the cost that was projected at the time, $25 million. The tollway had certain criteria with respect to how quickly the tolls, the incremental tolls, should be able to pay off the costs of a cost share with the ramp. The village of Rosemont offered to take that risk, essentially, that the tolls wouldn't generate sufficient revenue to pay off the tollway share. They offered to take that risk, finance it. The tollway agreed then to pay it off with toll revenue, our 50% share, with toll revenue from the ramp over a period not to exceed 25 years. So we limited our exposure to a 25-year period. The actual cost of construction of this ramp was significantly less than the initial engineer's estimates. It was estimated to be $25 million. It turned out to be $60 million. It's very evident that the toll revenue is sufficient to pay this ramp off rather than continue to incur 5.45% interest every year, which was the agreement that we had with the village of Rosemont. We think it makes sense to pay it off now, save the interest costs. It's estimated to be like $2.1 million of interest costs that we could avoid by paying it off now, as opposed to paying it off over what we project to be about a nine-year period. So our recommendation is that the board approve our going ahead, making payment to the village of Rosemont in the amount of the outstanding balance, which as of September 1st would be $8,226,538.09.
We have that in the budget.
We do have it in the budget. We had the initial share of the cost, and we are transferring from reserves the amount necessary to pay the interest.
Yeah. It sounds like that ramp has been very successful.
I think the biggest part of it is you see how that whole area is just like developing.
Right. And I know they have that new mall going in. We've been talking to them about the grand opening of that. I think there are well over 2,000 jobs in that mall alone, 4,000 jobs in that whole entertainment area. So it really, from a jobs perspective as well as a development perspective, I think it's really opening up there. So it was obviously important enough to that community to have that access to take the risk. It seems to have paid off for them. So.
Any questions? Yeah, okay. Therefore, being no questions, anything else, Mike, do you want to add to that?
No, thank you.
That's it for finance.
Yes.
Do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Moves to the full consent agenda. Thanks, Mike. Procurement has one item.
Correct. Morning, directors.
John.
So this item is a three-year sole source request to purchase Unisys mainframe upgrade, maintenance, and support. This contract provides support for critical business applications such as our financials, payroll, human resources, procurement, inventory control, and fleet management. This request allows us to upgrade equipment that's over 5 years old and no longer supported. It also includes maintenance support of the system and operating system upgrades to the current Unisys platform. I will note that the CPO's office canceled the sole source hearing that was scheduled for later today, as they didn't object to this request, nor were any protests filed. It's also important to note that we will be married with this system until our ERP initiative is fully implemented. Award is recommended to Unisys Corporation in a total amount not to exceed $1,689,322.
This is the first of a three-year contract? Is that what this is?
No, this is a new three-year sole source contract.
This is a new three-year.
But we've had this system in place for over 20-something years.
This is the old mainframe system,
correct,
right, that the ERP system will replace?
That's correct.
Okay. Every sole source proprietary software?
Is that
a big part of
it? It is all, yes, proprietary. You can't just go out and just buy this equipment.
Any questions about it? Okay. Anything else, John, you want to add?
No, that's all I have.
Okay. All right, there being no questions, we have a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Moves to the full consent agenda. Thanks, John. We have an unbundling update presentation. Paul and Gustavo.
That we're providing opportunities for businesses of all sizes to get involved with our Move Illinois program. And the Duck Pony Diversity Engineering has taken it to heart that this Move Illinois program, it's a long-term capital program where we're making large investments every single year. And we wanted it because of the size of this program and because of the support we got for this program. You know, we believe, you know, we want to get as many people involved in it as we can and see a lot of benefits generated by it. So I want to give you an update on our unbundling efforts today and also our other efforts that have been focused on small businesses. And we heard from Soher today about the Small Bridge Contractor Program, and that also is a very important component. So this presentation is going to highlight some of the things we've done so far, some of the challenges that we're seeing right now, and then also give you an idea on some of the actions that we're going to be contemplating and taking moving forward. And we are taking a multi-pronged approach to the implementation of this program and trying to help small businesses understand how about upcoming tollway work, inform them about that, and then also get to the point where they're actually submitting bids on our contracts. Unbundling, that's a term we've talked about a lot during the board meetings, and it basically is creating small construction contract opportunities in this $5 million or less category. We know from before when I came to you, I said that during our past capital program, we averaged about 42% of our contracts in that category, and I want to tell you that just in this year alone, we're at about 52%. So we're exceeding the number of small contracts that we put out in the 0 to 5 category. We've had 23 of them this year so far, so we are putting out a lot of small business contracting opportunities. And I'll tell you also, the last program was focused on big corridor improvements. We had the ORT work, we had the Tri-State to rebuild, we had I-88 to rebuild. In this program, we have a lot of system-wide work included, taking care of the existing system, getting all these bridges taken care of, and various aspects of our roadway spread out throughout the whole 286-mile system. So that by itself creates a lot of opportunities because it's hard to even consider bundling some of those things together when they're spread out over the whole system. We have, and Gustavo gave a presentation on the small business initiative that we've implemented, and we are working with the CPO right now to work out how we could assign small business goals to our construction contracts. But in the short term, we've already moved forward with set-aside contracts for small businesses. We've already advertised some of them, and we've already opened bids on all of them, on at least 5 of them, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. Outreach and networking, I'm always impressed when I hear from Gustavo. He reports on this. I attend a lot of meetings with Gustavo. We do a lot of outreach and trying to inform the communities and the contractors about the work that's coming. But diversity department tracked 317 events since the beginning of last year that they've been involved with, and there's 44 more coming this year, I believe. So, I mean, we're definitely getting out there. We're definitely communicating to anybody who will listen to us about the Move Illinois program and, you know, characterizing the work that's coming. In addition,